Okay, so last week, for those of you who are here, we did Perek Gimel, which is like five psukim, and we talked about some of the issues of timing, that based on the questions that we talked about at the beginning of the book of Yoel, of when the book takes place, so that helps you understand what is going on here, whether you're talking about some messianic era or some earlier era, and the like. But let us look at Perek Dalet. So Perek Dalet, Kihine, Bayamim Ahim Uveirahi, Asher Ashivet Shvut Yudav Yerushalayim. In those days, when I will restore the captivity of Yerushalayim and Yehuda. And again, just like in Perek Gimel, you have, right, I think maybe we quoted this last week, but Ibn Ezra quotes the two main shitot, right? The shita of Rabim, who say, Kinavu Alatid, and Ulai Kenu. He's like, maybe that's right. And then he quotes Rav Moshe Ben Shekatila as saying that this is predicting the times of Yehoshaphat. But again, in Ibn Ezra Bet, he says it's only Mashiach. There's two versions of Ibn Ezra here. The Rimon Belagensi says that this is the war that's predicted at the end of Zechariah, which is also, you know, future oriented. The Radak assumes it's Yimot HaMashiach. Pasuk Bet. V'kibatzti et kol ha'goyim v'horatim al emek Yehoshaphat v'nishpati imam sham al amim anachlati Yisrael asher bizru v'goyim v'arzi chileik ol. Gather them to emek Yehoshaphat. Now this is why presumably Moshe ben Jekatila thought it was the time of Yehoshaphat, but there's no reason to believe that. It's just the place called Emek Yehoshaphat, right? It's not like if someone says, we will meet on King George Street. No one has to then say, aha, this is the time of King George. I mean, like, we all know, or Rehov Lincoln, you know? They're like, oh yes, President Lincoln. You know that's a silent L, right? Like, you know, no, they don't know. Yes. Yeah. What?
It's weird how.
Yeah. Afterwards, but fine. So then it says, "I will judge the people, who they've scattered amongst the nations." And again, this is why the Mefarshim assume that this is the end of, right? The end of time, right? This is after the Galut, right? They're being punished for putting the Jews, in Galut. Now this. Tells you, and the Radak assumes this, that this is, what is it predicting here? The pre-messianic or the pre-end of days war, Radak says, V'tam kibatzi she'etem libam she'avoim Gog u'Magog. Right, he's saying that these people will come with Gog u'Magog, I mean Gog melech Magog, really. V'chenam rav nevuot Yechezkel, v'avitichal har Yisrael. These are the nevuot of Yechezkel. So again, this is the end of days. All the nations are going to be called. And God will judge them. And this is, you know, a classic eschatological. What? Yes. Yes. I don't know how many letters I put in there. It's a tongue twister every time. Image of God judging the end of days. And obviously you get that throughout Tanakh. And, you know, the Christians love talking about the end of days. You know, it makes it even to the fiction that's based on the New Testament, like Narnia, right at the end, where Aslan stands with Father Time and ends the world and lets them into the Narnia to come. Right, like it's right, so yes, C.S. Lewis, exactly. So God will bring all the nations there. The Malbim adds details. It'll be B'nai Edom, who'll be fighting B'nai Yishmael, right? So obviously he starts putting in the actual specifics. Vel ami yadu goral v'yitnu ha'yelid ba'zanav ha'yaldah machru v'yayin v'yishdu. And they've cast lots for my people. They've given a boy as a zonah, as a prostitute, a girl for wine, right? Meaning part of the problem was how much they degraded the Jewish people. They treated them as prostitutes, right? They sold them as slaves and the like, and that is what they're being punished for. The simple pshat, as the Mefarshim note, is that both of them are prostitutes, the men and the women. The point is the women were sold as prostitutes, not even for money. It's like, here, you know, I'll give you the girl for a bottle of wine. And the point is, Now, the Rimi Belaganti actually disagrees. He says this is not a prostitution, even though that does seem to be a simple shot. He says bizonah is for food. He said they're so poor, right? He goes the other way. He says, rather than saying the wine, right? You have one which explicitly sounds like sexual, zonah. The second one is about yayin. So most, like the Ibn Ezra says, yeah, I mean, they're both zonot, and one of them is paying money. The other one's not even paying that. It's paying wine. The Rimi Belaganti flips it, and he says, no, it must be that they're selling the kids for just for food. Right? So zonah is not znut, but mazon. It's food, so he's selling the boys and the girls for food. And exactly the same machloket you have by Rachav. What does it mean that she's an isha zonah? Either that she's a prostitute or she's an innkeeper, where they give out food. Same thing, but the point is that they degrade the Jewish people, and they will be judged not just for putting them in galut, but for the degradation that they put them through in their time in galut. The gam matem litzorvitz yidon chol galut pelashir agmul atem mishalmim alayvim gomlim atem alay kalmei rashiv gmulchem birosheichem. And now he lists the nations that he's going to punish. Tsor, Vitzidon, Plishtim, right? How will you repay me? How exactly do you think that you are going to pay me back? And of course, because this, according to many, this is messianic, so the Rabbanel says this doesn't really mean Tsor, Vitzidon, it means the Notrim and the Yishmaelim, which of course, the second you start thinking Mashiach, you're going to get people who fill in whoever they happen to see as the ultimate enemies. The Rikara says was probably more likely, which is that Elu Shechenei Eretz Yisrael. He's picking the neighbors of Israel. They were involved, and we see this in Yeshayahu and Yechezkel, where you have the Masatzor, the Matzah, right, these prophecies against the nations that surrounded the Jewish people, and therefore are particularly culpable for what happens to the Jews. Right, so, and Radak says, right, he's saying to them, what did you do? Like, why were you doing this? You came into my borders. And what did you do? Asher kaspizavi lekachtem, umachamadai tovim evetem lehechalchem. You took my silver, your gold, you took it in, to add insult to injury, you put it into the batei avod zara. Uvnei Yehudav Yerushalayim mechartem, levnei Yevanim, leman archikam, agulam. And you sold the Jews to the Greeks to take them far away. Yeah, so that definitely points to more a future tense here. The Rimi Belaganti just says Be'yeha Goyim. You took them to the islands. I don't know. Maybe he thinks it's Lav Dafka Yavan, right? That it's not specifically. Obviously, if you think this is messianic, so oh look, we're getting all the classic. And the Malbim says no. Literally, the Vanim by the Churban, their involvement in the Churban. Ho Moshe just says, it just means like the people on the other side of the sea. Hininim iram in a makom asher mechartem odam shama vashivoti gmulchem beroshechem. So I am going to stir them up from the place where you have sold them and bring them back and have vengeance, the repay, right, and repay you on your head. Meaning, as the Radak says, even though they went really, really far, they're coming back. And as the Radak says, Ohem, Obnehem, Ogamhem, Gambneim, Hem Bitchira Meitim. Them, their children, maybe all of them in the time of Tchira Meitim, I don't know, but they're coming back, and they're coming for you. Umechartem it bneichem, vebinutechem biyad bneyu damacharum lishvayim, el goy rachok, kiadonai dibeir. And your children will be sold by the Bnei Yehuda, and they will sell them to a faraway nation, because Hashem has spoken, I'll send them out to Malkut Shva, also far away. Kiruzot bagoyim kachu milchama ha'iru ha'giburim yikshu ya'alu kol anshei milchama. Proclaim this among the nations. Get ready for war. Get your strong men. Let everyone come with their weapons. Come, come, come. As Rashi says, it's rhetorical. Im tichlun atem li lachem kinegdi. Bring whoever you want. Let's see how you do in this fight. Gotta love cynicism. Gotta love it. Let's see, what is the Abarmanel here says? He insists that part of it is that the Jews have to come to watch it. Right. The Barbanel says, no, the point is that they're going to know what's happening and they still won't be able to get out of it. Right. That's the point, is that he's literally inviting to their death. Like, they're going to realize what's happening and not have a choice. Which is, of course, you know, sometimes when you see what's going on in the world, you're like, you know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
But, like, we end up in these quagmires and these... Kotu itechem l'charavot u'mazmeroteichem l'rimachem achalash yomar giboroni. Beat your plowshares into swords, your pruning hooks into spears, and let the weak say, I am strong. Now, Amos Chacham points out here that this is... Amos Chacham is the Dot Mikra, points out that this is meant to be a sick, bitter twist of the idyllic, it's like an ironic, punitive twist of the idyllic thing. So what's the idyllic nevuah we know from a parody? There's a go. That's the word. A parody. Because what does Yeshayahu say in Micha say? That you will beat your swords into plowshares because you won't have war anymore. And he says, beat your plowshares back into swords. Right? Meaning... Right, it's a, or the way he puts it is that, yes, the ideal age will be that people will be able to beat their swords into plowshares, but before that, it's going to be a war of all against all. So whatever weapon you can find, go. Furthermore, he notes that the agricultural imagery unites the two halves of the book. Right, where we talked about the agricultural problems that become the locusts in the first barracks. So now we're saying, well, take those same Kalim, you know, you're starving, you have no food, so. Right, and then you get the following. Hurry, all you surrounding nations, gather yourself. Cause your mighty ones to come down. Come, bring yourself. Say, make your Shabbat so I can judge you. I know that's what you all want, is just to be judged by God. Shalchu magal ki vashal katsir, ba'u redu ki malu gat. Heshiko yikavim ki rabar atam, put in the sickle, for the harvest is ripe. Come, tread, the wine press is full. The vats overflow, for their wickedness is great. Right, and Rashi says, yes, this is a mashal, right? You have an overflowing stream of sin. It's just, so we're just going to crush it all out, and it will just, that sin will just squeeze out, just ooze out. Right, the Rikara also, right, just like you squeeze out grapes, and the Ibn Ezra says, yes, derech mashal. Thank you. He's like, you know, like the way Amon Amov destroyed the people in Har Seir. Hashiku. Darchu. Darch Mashal. Thank you. I got it. Yes, you're not literally getting wine out of the evil nations. I got it. Radak also. Himshul ha'goyim ben l'tvua. And now he says specifically it's ripe. The point is that the Mashal is Higiyazman. It is, you are overripe. It is now time for the harvest. Meaning you've been...
This has been going on for a little bit.
Exactly, right. That's the imagery that he finds here to be most compelling.
When you press grapes, you like get wine and grape juice from it. So is this something good you're getting out from killing all of them?
No, you're just getting rid of it.
I don't know. Maybe. Hamonim, hamonim, be'emek ha'charuz, ki karov, yom ha'donai be'emek ha'charuz. Many, all of you, the multitudes in the valley of ha'charuz, Rashi says, of decision, right? Or, and Targum Yonatan also, the valley of judgment, right? Pilug dina. Come, hurry to your judgment. It's great. You're going to have fun there. The cynicism is dripping. It's wonderful.
I just can't get over the beat your plowshares into swords.
Oh, it's beautiful. I mean, it's just beautiful. It's just a the Barmanel adds that he could be actually commanding the Jews, right? That part of it is he may actually be calling on the Jews to take part in the vengeance. The Barmanel adds that. Not everyone else says that. Most people seem to assume it's God. Shemesh v'erech kadaru kolchavim asru nagham. The sun and the moon are darkened. the sun withdraw their shining, which again is that derech mashal, or is that, or the end of the world, right? Like the end of the world, the heat death of the known universe. I don't know.
That's always fun.
I mean, it's not impossible. Like when you, look, I'm sure for a long time people thought this was a mashal, and then like when you talk about the predictions that the end of the world will be the heat death of the universe, you're like, I mean, yes, the stars will just sort of go out, and the world will end.
No more energy.
Exactly.
No more energy transference. Sorry.
And then Vadonai mitzion yishag umyushalayim mitein kol lo virashu shamayim v'aretz Vadonai machaseh l'amo ma'oz l'vnei Yisrael. God will roar. Obviously, God is a lion. This is a wonderful one. Thunder from Yerushalayim. Heavens and earth will shake, but God will save his people. So apparently we will survive. Yes, exactly. Well, I don't know how we're surviving the heat death of the universe, but I don't know. Don't ask me.
It's an universe. It's just an engineering problem. Who is that guy on?
Yeah. Okay.
On the Lex Friedman podcast. It's just an engineering problem. The heat death of the universe.
Who said that? It's a great line.
There was somebody essentially on Lex Friedman podcast that essentially said that all this end of the universe stuff is just an engineering problem.
Good
for
him.
Which is a great attitude.
Sure. Vidatem ki ani Adonai lechem shochem itzion har kodesh vayta Yerushalayim kodesh vizirim lo yavru ba'od, because I am God. You shall know that I am God in Sion. And the stranger shall not pass there anymore. Right? And the Radakshan is yes, because the Beit HaMikdash is Usur Lazarim. Thank you. That is what I've learned from this. And the Rav Manel points out that, and again, this is something we find out in Tanakh, that God, when God takes revenge against enemies, that is one of the proofs of Hashkacha. We find that in Mitzrayim. Or the same line, Vidatem Gen Hashem, or that the Jews will know. Rather, that is one of the things that symbolizes God and God's involvement in the world. And then he goes on and he has a long piece here about Tchiyat HaMitim. And then he notes that it could be that there'll be two levels to Tchiyat HaMitim, right? Two stages of Tchiyat HaMitim. And maybe you can read that into these psukim, that there'll be these two stages. Vaya bayomahu yitfu arim asis vagvaot hilachna chalav cholifik yuda yilchu mayim mayan mibedona yitzei vishkat nachal ashitim. And on that day the mountains will drop sweet wine, the hills will flow with milk, and the brooks of Yehuda will flow with water, and the fountain will come forth from Beit Hashem. And Rashi was like, yes, according to the pshat, it will come. According to Midrash, it will be Mechaper on Pa'or. You know, Baal Pa'or, like the Bilam, you know, Bilam story. Why this will be the Kapara for that, I don't quite know. I don't know. Right, the Radak points out, the point is that after the destruction of all the nations, that's when things will be good for the Jews. Mitzrayim l'shmamatiyeh, ve'edom lo mbar shmamatiyeh, mechalas min yudasher shavchu dam naki ba'artzam, Mitzrayim, Edom, they will be desolate because of the violence they did and the people that they killed in their land, the innocents they killed in their lands. And Ibn Ezra just says, v'zot Mitzrayim hayom inena hakadmonit, our Egypt, not the ancient Egypt. This is our Egypt because of the crimes, right? He's pointing out it. Rabbi Mimbal again, he says, yes. We're not talking about the crimes of them having enslaved us in Egypt. We're talking about their political machinations throughout the generations with Babel and Assyria and all that. And Radak says, no. Mitzrayim is a symbol of the Ishmaelim, right? And Edom is Rome, which, of course, if you're going Messianic, that is how you're doing. And obviously he says, yeah, like we know in Daniel, and then he goes through where we know all the, right, the four animals and the four kingdoms and who do you plug in. And you remember when we did this and is trying to plug in everybody is quite the nightmare, and everyone plugs in different things. What? I mean, if you want to say Shabbat, you would say, yeah, it was the actual political problems that they had with Mitzrayim then. And obviously Bar Manel is like, yes, it'll be the Mitzrayim and the Christians and the, right, he's thinking like, you know, Crusades, and I mean, he's later than that, but you know, he's historically, yeah, that's, that, you know, that what happened. Malbim also says, yeah, it's the Yishmaelim. V'yudah lam teshev Yerushalayim l'dor v'ador, and Yerushalayim will be forever.
It doesn't sound very not messianic.
There's a reason the majority of the Farshim assume that this is...
At some point in this parak, they drop out.
At some point, they're like, yes, this sounds it. V'nikeiti damam lo nikeiti v'adonai shochein b'sion. And right, even if I pardon, I will not pardon their blood for Hashem b'sion. And this is the pasuk we quote in Harav HaRachamim, where it's that God will not atone, right, for... He will take revenge against the enemies. It's invoked, right, to say, yeah, God is not going to atone for the sins. He's going to punish them. He's going to punish our enemies. Okay, we have a few more minutes. So let me make a few points here. So first, interestingly, the Hohel Moshe has a siyum. Most of the Persians don't, but he has a nice little siyum. And he says, Signon Sefer Yoel Na'im Ma'od. I like Neil. It's very nice. Umilitzav tav nechmadot. It's just beautiful. Zirav ne'emanim. Ashenu chalik zoralav. Shu min yefifei yifrei tanachi. I can tell you for sure it's amongst the most beautiful Tanakh. V'man, this is amazing. V'matche lekrot ba lo yaniach hasefer miyado ad bo el sofo. Once you pick up Yoel, you can't put it down until you finish. It's so funny. V'siman ha'acharonim yesh b'toret remez v'yudim yikarim sh'nivim acharim sh'kamo acharim od Yoel emiku ha'chakir rabahem v'asum nichonim v'yarum yoter v'yoter. Now he thinks that actually Yoel is like the earlier of the ones that is predicting these things, and later Nevi'im he actually sees as like commentaries on this, which is an interesting framing, that because it is sort of vague what's going on here. I mean, you can tell it's messianic, but he actually thinks that the later Nevi'im are Perushim, especially if you think that Yoel, he thinks Yoel is a little bit earlier, right, more in the time of like Hoshea and Amos. So if that's the case, then right, so the later Nevi'im can really develop this. And then he goes to the Mepharshim. That's a very interesting commentary on this. Okay, a few other points. So we already talked about Amos Chacham's point that this is like a cynical repurposing of the good messianic visions. We talked about the sickle. We also noted in the first two prakim that are the locusts real, or we use military imagery to describe the locusts, and it wasn't clear which is the mashal and which is the nimshal. So here as well, right, once you start in the agricultural things, it links it back to that parak, and then you gotta work it out together. But it's worth noting that if you take the first half as literal, or even if you don't, but the point is that the suffering that they endured was agricultural. So the fact that the nechama that they have of it is that there will be wine and butter and strings at some level is seeing a nechama or a closing of the first half of the book. But furthermore, right, it's not just the food; it's also the indignity. Right, the indignity, right? So in addition to having food, right, that we have to be, right, the revenge, it partially is to regain the Jews' dignity. Now, if we go back just to our angels thing at the beginning, so remember, we talked about how our angels sees Sefer Yoel as pre-rabbinic, and that his main goal is to teach people how to respond once there is not Nevuah, similar to what Malachi is doing. I mean, he says, right, if you think this is messianic, this makes sense, right? If Yoel is really later, so then the fact that he has these messianic visions, again, makes sense because he's basically setting people up, and this is like your plan. This is what you should be looking forward to till the end of time. He also suggests that we can go back to the Midrash. Remember the Midrash that he's Ben Shmuel, right? So if you remember the beginning of Sefer Shmuel, what is the beginning of Sefer Shmuel said? At the time of Shmuel, there wasn't yet Nevuah. Shmuel ushered in an age of Nevuah, but there wasn't yet Nevuah. So he says, according to this, maybe, right, this is like Yoel is teaching people how to, right, how to respond, just like Shmuel had to teach people how to speak to God. However, here, sorry, Angel's little chiddush is that what is Yoel's suggestion in this whole book of how the Jews should respond, not really in these prakim, but really in the earlier prakim, is tefillah. Is tefillah and tshuva. And he says, in that sense, it makes sense because when we don't have Nevuah, what is the way we continue a relationship with God? Tefillah. And he has this beautiful quote from Lonely Men of Faith, which I hadn't thought of in this context, but the Ravs, right, I'll just quote you, right? Joseph B. Soloveitchik similarly viewed prayer as the natural heir to prophecy. When prophecy ceased, men of the Great Assembly refused to allow dialogue between man, God and man to cease. If God had stopped calling man the urge, let man call God. So the covenantal colloquy was shifted from level of prophecy to that of prayer. And right, so Yoel is starting to build that kesher, right? Both by talking about how you react to things and you don't know why they happen, and also by looking forward towards Mashiach, right, and saying, look, we're entering the dark period, but it will end at some point. And that is really, with that, I guess we'll close Yoel. So now Hoshea and Yoel down. Okay? Next time, Cowboy.